You're listening to Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIPC.
Thanks for tuning in to Saturday Night on the Circle with me, your host, Ethan Hatcher. Tonight is a special edition of the show. I'm presenting an Election Day extravaganza. Earlier in the week, I filled in on Tony Katz Today with the Tony Kinnett from the Chalkboard Review, and together we sat down with congressional candidate Angela Grabowski to talk about issues facing the 7th District, and we resume our conversation now. Let's get into the nitty-gritty. This guy, Congressman Carson, he has been ensconced in that office all the way since March of 2008. Fast forward 14 years later, he's considered to be one of the safest congressional seats in Congress. But you feel there's an opening. Why now? Why 2022? Where's the wedge that's going to unseat this candidate?
You've done your homework. He is considered the most safe seat in Congress, and he thinks that this is his seat for life.
Takes it for granted.
Absolutely. He takes it for granted. He has never worked the campaign. I tried to ask him for a debate. I've asked all of the TV stations in town. I've asked all of the radio stations in town. I even delivered a letter personally to his office just to find out that his office has been closed for 2.5 years.
I gotta stop you there. Wait a minute. You're telling me that this congressman's office in Indianapolis, in the 7th district, has been closed for 2.5 years? Wait, why is a sitting congressman's office closed, especially for... Two and a half years.
Well, the answer is self-evident, Tony. Everything's going so well in Marion County,
exactly,
right? Everything's swimmingly. No problems at all.
Wait. No. What's the reason that they give do they give a reason for the office being shut down for 2.5?
COVID
is why the sitting congressman's office is shut down. So they have like an alternative way for you to get in touch with them then, don't they?
Oh, probably his email, but everybody I talk to who sent him emails, what they usually get is just a standard form letter. Thank you for reaching out to us. Here's what we're doing in Congress at this point of time, and we'll be in touch.
So this man has provided an auto reply middle finger to the residents of the 7th District by not having an open office and just sending back these Microsoft Office template emails to people?
Yeah, you can call it whatever you want to call it, but he's definitely been completely disregarding everybody in the district. District is suffering right now.
He's an absentee representative. I live in Marion County. I'm a constituent of the 7th District, and not once have I even gotten an Andre Carson mailer is how for granted he takes the seat.
Okay, so we can talk about campaigns. We can talk about all of the things that we currently find that are wrong with Carson. That, you know, that's a list a mile long. But what I want to know is on this specific issue. So not in some grand political campaign message, but just on this thing, let's say I am a Marion County voter. Let's say you win the election.
Yes.
They want to talk to you personally. They have some concerns. I don't know what side of the aisle they're on, left, right, center, that monarchist, anarchist, somewhere in between. And they want to talk to you. How are you going to handle just speaking to your constituents differently than Carson does? Because this matters to people.
Listen, I've been in business for over 25 years now, and I know what my clients expect. A couple of years ago, 24 hours turnaround time was good. But in today's day and world, everybody wants to hear from you literally right away. So I think if somebody has concern in actually getting in touch with their representative, it's probably a big concern, something that can't wait. Acknowledgement needs to come out of that office right away, and somebody's going to have to be meeting with the constituency. Of course, there has to be a staff, but it would be my responsibility. We need to talk to the people. I talk to the people on the ground. I see what's happening. People are hurting. They're complaining. They've been living in poverty for a very long time. The only issue is they think that if they're going to continue voting for the same representatives or for the same party, that something is going to change.
You know, that's really interesting, and I think that's fair because just as a small personal anecdote here, so when Greg Pence ran for the district that I'm in, I didn't vote for him in the primary, just very openly and honestly. Nothing personal, really. I just didn't. He wasn't my first choice. But since he did win that election, every time I've contacted his office with a question, I was reached back with personal communication within a few days, and often within the same day, and it was directed personal. They remembered me from time to time, you know, through the emails, and we never, you know, used any institutional pressure, just asked. And that kind of personal feedback always made me feel like I was less of, you know, just sending someone off to DC to live the vacation DC lifestyle and to actually care, because Marion County's got some issues at the moment, you know, looking at your district.
Huge issues. And listen, as I said, I've been campaigning for over 10 months right now.
When you say campaigning for 10 months, that sounds like such so campaigning for 10 months sounds so blasé elitist. What do you mean by campaigning for 10 months?
Okay. I've been talking to people. I've stopped by at a lot of different churches on Sundays. Every event in all six townships that I could go to personally, I went to personally.
Why? Why did you feel it was necessary for you to go there personally? Because Carson's not doing that.
Because I needed to find out what are the real issues on the ground.
So what you're saying is you didn't just look at the Republican talking sheet of what they say are the issues on the ground. You went around asking people what their concerns were?
I guess this is how I think the job should go. It's a job responsibility, right? I mean,
it seems common sense.
It seems common sense to me too.
And that's what I wanted to drill down with you is, what have you heard on the campaign trail? What's the by and away largest complaint and source of dissatisfaction for Marion County voters?
Yeah, it depends on where you go. Of course, you're talking to people in Center Township. What do you hear? We have a food desert. We have a banking desert, we have a housing desert, and we have a political desert. So when I heard those four, I said, you know what, it sounds like you live in Sahara here.
What do they mean by a political desert?
They only hear one side of the story. And the Democrats are not allowing Republican voices to be heard. What I even done, I went to church on, I think it's 42nd and Post Road, the Olivet Church, that where the pastor is Wayne Moore. And pastor who gets up in at the service hits himself in the chest and said, I'm a lifetime Democrat. And the pastor who only brings Democrats to his church to talk to the parishioners. And I decided to go. I went there a couple of times just to see what is going on. There is only one side of the story that is being presented. So he had Ryan Mears. He had a congressional delegation there, but only from one side of the equation. So people don't know what Republicans are for, what they're standing for, what they can actually do for them. We had a meet and greet at one of the churches, and of course nobody came. And the pastor told us the whole ticket, Marion County ticket, we didn't think that Republicans would show up. So all five of us showed up, but nobody from the community came to hear what we have to say. And then we were told that, you know, we're all about common sense. Yeah, we're about common sense. The crime is through the roof, right? So when the crime is there, stores are leaving, where people are getting their food. They're buying food at the gas stations at the much higher prices and not so healthy food. So banks, there is not necessarily a huge financial literacy in the area. People are not using banks. And this is why the last PNC bank just left like 12 months ago, straight from the Center Township. You think about businesses, they're closing because of the crime. And it's a vicious,
like
vicious,
Starbucks on Monument Circle.
Exactly. Vicious, vicious circle. And how do we break that circle of poverty with today's Policies that are coming from Washington, that are coming from Marion County, Indianapolis, that is being run by Democrats, we can't change it. We have to stop it.
So this kind of circle of poverty that you've been talking about, you're obviously Carson's been in office since you said 2008.
2008, yeah. March 17th, I think, was when he was when he took office and has stayed there ever since. 14 years.
Have we seen this traditional cycle of poverty, this traditional cycle of violence broken or aided in Marion County during his time, or has it gotten worse? Or maybe we should just say, since it's a circle, it's persisted.
Yeah, the people are telling me that it has gotten worse.
We say people are telling you, that means one of two things when I talk to a lot of people running for office. That either means their campaign manager or their office is telling them this, or actual people on the ground are telling them this.
I'm on the ground.
So like average ordinary citizens in Marion County are telling you, I'm dealing with the poverty right now. I'm dealing with the violence right now. It hasn't changed since Carson took office.
I visited community centers. I visited charter schools. I visited public schools. I talked to people pretty much everywhere. And I concentrated a lot on the Center Township because they're suffering the most. This is like the urban area of Indianapolis. And those are the issues. So what Andre Carson has been doing pretty much every session of Congress, he brings a bill to the table to ask federal government for grants to take care of the food deserts here in Indianapolis. And it dies. It doesn't even go to the committee. Why? Because somewhere he can only get between 16 and 20 Democrats to co-sponsor his bill. He never crosses the aisle. So if you take a look, if people actually wanted to take a look at what he has done, he hasn't passed any significant bills, none whatsoever. So he's not a legislator. He is not taking the issues of the Marion County, of his district, to Washington and trying to solve them. And if he does not cross the aisle, which he never does, he votes with Democrats 100% of the time. He votes with the squad 95% of the time, and moving more and more to the left. His radical ideas have to be stopped. Otherwise, the life in Marion County is not going to get any better. So he tried to bring another bill about the financial literacy. Again, it's the same thing. He can't get a penny from the federal government to bring back, to actually educate the people what is available so people are not being taken advantage of. But nothing. It dies, not even going to the committee. So again, people will have a choice on November 8th. They can continue having a guy with a very familiar last name. Right. Everybody remembers Julia, but they also say Andre's not Julia. Julia was there with the people. She was helping the people, and he's nowhere to be found. Okay, other than maybe some food opportunity out there. So, or they can vote for me, despite the fact that I have an R next to my name, because I really care and I want to help. And you know, I came to the States 33 years ago. And my story is very simple. It's not extraordinary. It's like every immigrant, like every refugee comes to the States. We were stateless. We didn't have a citizenship of the country. We were homeless. We were jobless. We were penniless. We had $72 per person in one suitcase, and this is how we started. So we know what it means to start from ground zero and start building life in Indianapolis, in America.
I'm glad that you know what it's like to start from zero, because that's essentially where you're beginning with a Republican campaign in Marion County, despite the fact that he's enormously apathetic toward the office and he has very little to show for accomplishing things in Marion County, despite being there for the last 14 years. His office has been closed for the last two, so clearly he's not reaching out to the constituency, but we've already acknowledged that this is still considered to be an incredibly safe seat. And you talked about the collusion between partners, of course, in media, as well as the religious community here in Indianapolis, who are stonewalling any opposition. The congressman won't debate. The media seemingly paying very little attention to the issue, also incredibly apathetic about the race. How are you going to overcome those odds and connect? Here we got last 3 weeks, you know, before voting day on Tuesday, November 8th. How are you cutting through the noise to connect with the Marion County voters and get your voice heard? It's incredibly important.
Listen, I'm doing everything that I possibly can do. Everybody who is on the campaign trail with me, we're knocking on the doors every Saturday and Sunday. I'm making phone calls to everybody individually. And I think, again, this is what the representative needs to do. I don't need the celebrity status, right? So I'm pretty well off, and I'd like the place in life where I am. I just want to do it because my heart is telling me that somebody has to step up to the plate and be a voice for the people who have not had this voice for a very long time.
You know, I had a small anecdote here. This is kind of reminding me of there was a teacher when I was at Indianapolis Public Schools as the science coordinator that I was working with, and they kept trying the same thing over and over and over, and it frustrated them because you can kind of get in these situations mm-hmm. when you're on the job, when you're in life, where you don't really see there's a different way to do it because you may either you're unaware of it or you feel like your hands are tied or something like that. And what I'm seeing in this situation is that there are a lot of voters in Marion County who just feel as though they have to vote Democrat because that's just what you do. That's mm-hmm. what they've been told that works. But if you take a moment and you look around at the local level, if you look around at the state level, you look around at the federal level, you do not see Democratic policies being effective in any way, in any shape, and any form, especially at the federal level. Ask yourself this. In the last couple of years, has your life drastically improved in Marion County because of actions that Representative Carson has put forward? Has he talked to you? You know, like you said, has he opened his office? Have you been able to voice your concerns? And before you even get to who is next to his name on the other side of the aisle, that's the first question you need to ask. You know, am I in a better place off? After that, it seems to me as though it would be worthwhile to reach out to actually talk to the representative campaigning or the candidate campaigning here. I think personally that someone who's walking around talking to these different communities and areas is where we need to be heading.
Yeah, listen, I feel that we can't have representatives that are just sticking to one side of the aisle and voting 100% with one party. One party cannot have all of the answers for all of the people. We need somebody who can sit down at the table, bring everybody to the table, bring the religious communities, business leaders, Democrats, Republicans, and actually do something to help people because it hasn't been happening. So you see what's going on with crime. You see what's going on with education in the Marion County. And, you know, because educational levels are so low, I believe we have the crime that we have. I remember statistics were only like 17% of black and brown children in Indiana can read and write at their grade level. So how are we going to compete with Russia or any other country, India, China, anything?
When is the last time that you saw Representative Carson talk about the statistics? That's the kind of the question I have. That said, we will be coming back shortly. Ethan, yeah. What do we have coming up next?
We are going to be having Cindy Carrasco joining us after the half hour mark. But really, Angela, I appreciate your time coming in office and talking about the issues facing Marion County. And if you're one of the voters that believe it's time to have some rotation in office, some different representation, and you want to return responsiveness back to Congress, consider voting for Angela Grabowski for Congress.
AngelaForIndiana.com.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Stay tuned to Saturday Night on The Circle with me, your host, Ethan Hatcher. More content to come. And coming up later in the hour, we invite Cindy Carrasco onto the program to talk about her run for Marion County Prosecutor.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell.
You're You're listening to Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIPC.
Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on the Circle. This is the Election Day extravaganza. We've been having conversations with candidates running for office. Just finished up with 7th District Congressional candidate Angela Grabowski. And coming up after the half hour mark, we're inviting into the studio Cindy Carrasco, who's aiming for Marion County Prosecutor. Stay tuned for more on 93 WIBC.
You're listening to Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIPC.
Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Ethan Hatcher. Thanks for listening. This is Saturday Night on the Circle, and tonight's show is an Election Day extravaganza. Since Tuesday, November 8th is so tantalizingly close, I thought it would be best if we spent our time getting to know a couple of the candidates a little better here in Marion County. We started the show with a conversation from 7th District Congressional candidate Angela Grabowski, and now we resume our conversation with Cindy Carrasco, who's making a run for Marion County Prosecutor. Thank you for joining us, Cindy, and taking time out of your day to help talk about the campaign and the issues facing the distraught citizens of Marion County.
Well, thanks so much for having me, guys. It's such a pleasure to be on and share with you about why I'm running for this very, very important office. We're 19 days out from Election Day, and I'm very excited about the prospects of what we can do to make Marion County a safe and vibrant place once again.
So given that, and that's something that everyone, you know, will say that they support. I want to make Marion County safe again. That's fantastic. I agree. But to break it down out of the political language, out of the normal cold political interview process, I got to ask you one straight question. How is the safety situation in Marion County right now?
It's not good. The reality is that we've been facing record homicides for 2 years in a row. This year, we're on track to surpass 200 homicides. Over 950 people have been shot or stabbed here in the city alone. Over 76 children have suffered gunshots. That, to me, is the real concrete evidence that the crime issue is very much a problem for Marion County. You'll hear city leaders talk about crime being down, but when I give you those statistics, they may be down as compared to last year, but being on track for over 200 homicides is not the place where I want this place to be, this city to be, and we deserve better.
Can you illustrate the differences between yourself and your incumbent? What are the largest failings of Ryan Mears' handling here of prosecutor here in Marion County? And how would a potential Carrasco administration be different? How would you handle things differently?
Well, where do I begin?
Right. Yeah, that's kind of a full list.
I'll start by just telling you folks, I want to be prosecutor because I want to get that office back to doing exactly what the job is. The job description is in the title. It's about prosecuting crime. It's about getting back to the fundamentals of what that office is supposed to do. It's supposed to hold criminals accountable. We've got an issue where the current prosecutor lets repeat violent offenders back out on our street.
And how did that work out? How did letting repeat violent offenders back out on the street, how has that worked for the citizens of Marion County?
That's right. I mean, we sit here and wonder, why is it that crime is up? And when you look at the headlines, when you see the people who are committing murders in our city and go back and check their history, you'll see that they had interactions with the criminal justice system, multiple interactions. And the common theme is that you'll see 9 times out of 10, there is a plea deal with the prosecutor's office that allowed that person to be back out on the street to commit yet another crime. It is about getting that office back to doing the job. And I'll tell you even something more in the nuts and bolts of the office. It's about hiring and recruiting talented deputy prosecutors. That has a real effect on how those cases are actually prosecuted once police officers bring the cases to the prosecutor's office. If you've got a group of talented, experienced deputy prosecutors that are confident, that are trained, that are well-equipped to actually go into the courts and get that conviction, you're not going to have that temptation to want to plea a case down.
Speaking of staffing issues facing Marion County and hiring more deputy prosecutors in order to make sure these cases are taken care of, what about the processing centers of Marion County that are sometimes understaffed on weekends and without judges there to make a concrete determination on bail? These criminals then get out on incredibly low bonds.
Oh, Ethan, you know crime doesn't happen on the weekends. That's right. Only a 9 to 5 on Monday through Friday.
I mean, would your administration work to staff the jails and the courthouses on the weekends as well?
Yes, it would. And it starts with getting the right team, getting the team together to be able to be available to make sure that everyone has a deputy prosecutor available to them at any hour of the day. And whether that's law enforcement, whether that's a judge or a magistrate that's making a decision on bail in the middle of the weekend, they have to have the staff available there to be able to make the best decisions that they can. And that's simply not happening.
I got to tell you, it bewilders me. And seriously, to take a moment, to those who are listening, can you believe that we have to ask a candidate, a prosecutor candidate in a city, are you going to staff the jails and the courthouses on the weekends? We have to ask that. We actually, in the United States of America, here in Indianapolis, we have to ask a candidate live on the air, are you going to hire people to keep the citizens of Indianapolis safe?
In the capital city, in one of the most populous counties in the state.
Yeah, and so, Cindy, I have to ask you here, how ridiculous to you personally do you think that it has become that we have to ask these kind of questions of candidates like you here on the air? This is how they get answered. I mean, what does this speak to the mayor's legacy of prosecution?
You know, you guys are right. I sit back and I think to myself, this is the city that I chose to be my home over 20 years, almost 20 years ago. And this wasn't always this way. We had a very safe, a vibrant city that I chose to be my home. I don't understand why we are allowing us to go on in this situation where we're having to ask ourselves, can we staff, can we provide staff and resources that are absolutely necessary here in our city over the weekend? This is ridiculous to me. And it's not an issue of funding. There are ways to fund these deputy prosecutors. There are ways to be able to make sure that we have the resources available to make our city safe. And it's by making sure that everything in that office is laser focused towards reducing the crime. Any program that is looking at something different, any program that's duplicated somewhere else, guess what, folks? Our house is on fire. We've got to put out the flames, and that's where all the resources have to go. That's where the dollars have to be spent. Judges and magistrates have to have the ability to call on a deputy prosecutor at any time to be able to make an informed decision.
Now, the Indy Star this morning published an article concerning, so we're sitting here up in the studio above Monument Circle, and we're looking out over it, and I'm thinking there was an article that came out this morning from the Star saying that, well, there's a Starbucks that's closing down here because they say that it's unsafe. There's a level of violence. There's a level of homelessness. It's a very dangerous area to be in, which is amazing to me that Monument Circle, where I used to go every single year as a kid and really enjoyed it, is now this unsafe part of Indianapolis, downtown, east side, west side, every side of Indianapolis. Right. And they say that what you described, this laser etched focus on putting the fire out, is an oversimplification, that really there are all of these diverse factors and things we need to consider with funding and systemic issues that are facing people other than what you're suggesting, which is just making a focus on stopping the crime. What would you respond to that idea that it's really oversimplified?
Look, we have to start somewhere. We have to start somewhere to start changing the trajectory of our city. It's that simple. I'm not here suggesting that it is a one-size-fits-all approach, that the future of the city is going to rest on one individual. What I'm saying is what we've been doing for the past 3 years is simply not working. We need change in order to start changing the narrative. Now, you know, when it comes to Starbucks, I'll tell you, I lived downtown when I first moved here, and I never thought of being unsafe downtown. I never felt unsafe, but that was almost 20 years ago. I walk downtown nowadays, and I know there's a perception that downtown isn't safe. And I've had lots of conversations with people about, well, downtown is safe or downtown isn't safe. But the fact of the matter is I've been running for this position almost 11 months. And the one thing that I've consistently heard across the entire county is that there is a perception that downtown isn't safe. I can tell you hands down, that's what I hear. Now, the reason why Starbucks is an issue is not because we're losing a Starbucks, we're losing a coffee shop. It's the fact that Starbucks, that's been a hallmark of the Circle, is closing, and they're citing safety concerns as a reason.
Right, that any business in any way, shape, or form would feel like they have to vacate because they feel unsafe.
That's right. I want to keep their businesses open. I want to change that perception that downtown isn't safe. I want to work so that the businesses, especially the businesses in the downtown area, in the Circle and the surrounding areas, can start to see more foot traffic. And that's going to come when people start to think that the downtown area can now be safe, when we start changing that perception. You know, what the media hadn't necessarily covered as widely is that on Monday night, just over on North Shadeland, the Starbucks had been broken into. The whole storefront was broken into. Crime Stoppers had pictures of the person that was there with a rifle. I mean, these types of things are real and they're happening in our community. And I'm simply saying, I want to change that. I want to change the perception, especially as we're talking about downtown, that it's unsafe, so that our businesses can then start thriving. I want to make sure that no other business closes.
You've been listening to 93 WIBC. I'm Ethan Hatcher, joined by Tony Kinnett from the Chalkboard Review, and we've been speaking with candidate for Marion County Prosecutor Cindy Carrasco here on the radio. And before we wrap up this interview, Cindy, I wanted to talk with you about the prospects for winning election here now 3 weeks out from Election Day on Tuesday, November 8th. In order to win in a blue county, you're going to have to build a coalition of voters. And I was speaking with my friend Abdul Shabazz on my program Saturday Night on the Circle a few weekends ago, and he was telling me among Marion County voters for whom crime is the number one issue, you are, of course, the number one candidate. You have built your campaign out on addressing the criminal issue in Marion County and have very strong talking points about those considerations. But for voters who have other concerns, they are leaning towards Mears. And how are you going to reach out and assuage the voters who maybe are concerned about prosecutorial resources being used up on low-level marijuana drug offenses or prosecuting women who seek alternative abortion treatment that may go beyond the scope of what's allowed in the state?
That's a great question. And I'll start by saying that I started this campaign because people in our city were dying in record numbers. People in our city were being victims of violent crime that was affecting not only the victim, their family, but our community as a whole. Every single time people in our community hear about a shooting or about someone being stabbed or someone being a victim of a violent crime, it really does. It affects us all. When I hear about Crystal Walton, who was shot down when she was dropping off her children, when I hear about so many different stories, when I hear about, you know, people being assailed with a weapon. I mean, those things really affect us. That is why I'm running. That is my number one focus. My focus is not going after people who have low-level possession of marijuana. I will not prosecute women. My focus is not going after doctors or nurses. I am very much focused on reducing violent crime. And when it comes to what the path to victory is, I am consistently hearing across the entire county that people are fed up with what's happening in our city and they want change. It's not a political issue. The issue of safety, the issue of feeling safe at home when everybody goes home at night and you close the door behind you, it doesn't matter what your politics are. You just want to feel safe at home. And so what the polls show is that we've had each one of us have, you know, taken the votes that we've had for whatever our positions might be. But there's a lot of independent voters that aren't staking their ground on low-level possession of marijuana or the crime issues that are facing our city. Those people are the people that I've been focusing on to tell them what my plan is, to assure them that a vote for Cindy is going to be a vote for a safer Indianapolis. I've been on the phone. I've been out talking to voters. I am everywhere and everywhere so that I can make my case to those voters to say, if you want something to change, if you want a safe Indianapolis, if you want that vibrant city once again, then it's time for a change.
Cindy, tell us, where can we go to learn more about your campaign if we're interested?
You can go to cindyforindy.com, CYNDIFORIND.com. We'd love your support. We need your help. We need you to go out to vote and tell your friends to vote. Cindy for a safer Indianapolis.
Let's support a safer Marion County. I wish you all the luck in the world in the upcoming election, Cindy.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Stay tuned to Saturday Night on The Circle. I'm your host, Ethan Hatcher, closing out the show, coming up next.
This is Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIPC.
Welcome back to the show, and thanks for listening to me, your host, Ethan Hatcher. I've been putting on an Election Day extravaganza, replaying conversations from earlier in the week when I filled in on Tony Katz Today with the Chalkboard Review's Tony Kinnett, and together we spoke with 7th District Congressional candidate Angela Grabowski, as well as the Marion County prosecutorial candidate Cindy Carrasco, addressing issues facing the district. But the conversation and the fun doesn't stop there. You need to stay tuned to 93 WIBC. If you missed those conversations, catch my podcast uploaded to Saturday Night on thecircle.fireside.fm. But coming up next, we're joined by the magnificent Terry Stacey, where together we share an adventure from Cambridge City, talking with the local shop owners and proprietors. And I think you'll enjoy the adventure. So stay tuned to Saturday Night on The Circle, coming up next.
I'm tickled pink that things are rosy and skies are blue once again.
This is Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIBC.
No more will I.
Welcome back to this very special episode of Saturday Night on The Circle, where I'm your host, Ethan Hatcher, and producer Carl, pushing those buttons and doing the things to make the show function. Appreciate your hard work as always. This week, I've got something really special lined up. Terry Stacey and I went to the small town of Cambridge City last weekend to speak with some of the shop owners who shared their wonderful stories of this small town. Truly, it's something special off the beaten path that if you find yourself on that side of the state, you should definitely check out. Wonderful antiquing opportunities and beautiful people. We began our adventure at La Mortuaire, which is currently an antique store, but a building which has lived many unique and interesting lives since its construction. Haley, the owner, told us all about it, and that's where we begin our conversation tonight.
Ethan Hatcher, Terry Stacey, we're in Cambridge City, right off the old National Road.
Historic Highway 40.
Highway 40, which I grew up on, by the way, in Henry County. Don't pick up anything, Ethan. Tell us where we are.
All right. We are in La Mortuaire, and we're speaking with the owner, Haley. She has shown us this fantastic building, which has lived many lives, and we're going to share the stories with you now. It has been a mortuary. It is currently a marketplace. It has has been a brothel. It has lived other lives, and you're going to hear the story. But first, we got to go downstairs into what was not only the embalming room, because it was a cooler temperature and that kept the bodies from decaying, but it also was a functional 1920s speakeasy back in the day, which is so uber, uber cool.
It is a wooden floor, and it looks like we're picking up a cellar door, is what it looks like we're doing right now. Haley is with us, and Haley is the owner. Haley, do you feel like that this is a haunted environment?
There's no.
I'm feeling cold air right now coming up.
There's no feeling about it. We do partner with different groups, national groups that do investigate, and we've gotten a great deal of data that would substantiate that this is haunted.
Friendly ghost?
Always good vibes. Yes, always friendly ghost. We had one that was somewhat engaging, but we ignored them. And one of the gals did say that she tried to push him back with some sage.
Now
I forgot my sage.
You've told me that there were actually paranormal happenings, stuff flying around the room, pianos playing.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Sorta.
Absolutely. We did ask them that the door was moved, and then we can talk about more. There was an inhabitant here of recent who was a music writer, and his name was Glenn, and he did write music, and so he asked for a shot. We are going to accommodate this next investigation, and we brought a keyboard because of that, and it did play on its own. Not a full song, but notes were being played.
What kind of liquor did he want?
I think it was whiskey.
Just good old whiskey. Okay, wait a minute. All right, hang on. Okay. We're going down right now.
Making the traversal.
Ethan just taken off as we go downstairs. Haley, you okay?
Sure, absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, you be behind me,
okay.
Because if anybody's pushed, there's a chicken leg on the floor. I'm not going to lie. I'm seeing a chicken leg right now. What is that?
It could just be decor.
Okay. Maybe it's just Christmas nothing, decor, not a chicken leg. What are you doing, Ethan? Now, why are you making me go first?
Because I'm making sure that we don't get bumped up.
Haley, go. You go first. Okay. Haley's gonna go first. She's climbing around me. I'm leaning up against Ethan because it's a narrow stairwell.
Yes. Just go ahead and close us in. That's okay.
Yep.
They're gonna close the cellar door now on top of us, which means I can't see anything. But
turn on the flashlight.
I do believe I see candles. There's candles everywhere down here, and tables, and you know what? It's actually very beautiful and very peaceful, and we're safe from tornadoes.
True. Very, very, very true. Safe from tornadoes, but maybe not the spirits.
I don't really know what to say next because, look, my hand is a little shaky.
All right. So not only was this the embalming room at one point, it was a speakeasy, but tell us more about how it accessed the other building. Because, of course, Prohibition era, the prohies are coming in. They're going to take your booze and you got to go. You're making an escape. Where were the patrons of this establishment running off to?
Sure. So we can go even further to this wall here toward the east, and you can see that there is a difference here. I think Ethan I showed earlier here. So and they have since sealed this up. Yes, since sealed this up. However,
which we're looking at about the the size of a
1920s person.
1920s person, not your today person, but a 1920s person could easily get through this small opening that's been covered.
It had to be discreet.
It had to be discreet.
These were lawbreakers.
Yeah, lawbreakers.
Sure. So what I'm told is, you know, there was a speakeasy, and if they were interrupted or someone, tried to take, their booze, they would run to this next building that's connected to us and hide.
Okay. Nothing's touched me.
Not yet.
Nothing has pushed me. Nothing has pulled my hair. It's warm down here. Usually they say that spirits, there's a cold air that might come around when a cold... No, that was just Ethan moving quickly around to my side. Ethan, what are you feeling now?
I'm feeling very comfortable because this place smells fantastic. Haley has a great collection of incense and candles that make La Mortuaire smell more like a conservatory or a greenhouse.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Wonderful.
Which we do that in the summer. I do. I do aqua and hydroponics. So right up our alley.
What is that noise?
Those are the customers.
The customers upstairs.
Okay, I'm completely taken back. Although I love this, I really do love this environment because it is kind of spooky. You know, it really is kind of spooky. Not scary, but it just we're in the dark. Appropriately paranormal. So we did kind of go away from that. We are in the midst of a remodel, and so we did add some things here to make it more warm and inviting. Our first investigations were basically on the floor, and it was a little bit more terrifying.
Why did you buy this? Why did you want to do what you're doing here? And how long ago was it that you invested?
It wasn't me. It told me. So if that makes sense. Like I didn't choose it. It chose me. So I was literally, to kind of digress, about 11, 12 years ago, I'm a medical professional and I travel extensively, but when I came home, this is where I spent my time. I spent my money. I spent my time. And so it just kept bringing me back and bringing me back. And one day as I drove through, the building was available and it was so surreal. Driving down, I caught something from my eye and then look back and then I had to drive around the block and then I was sold. So,
and you did it.
I did it.
And how long ago was that?
So about three and a half to four years ago.
And everything has been just as you had hoped?
Absolutely. And it evolves. It evolves every day. I learn more and the building speaks to me and we just change. And I think with the vendors we have and the things that we do, we just evolve and we're letting it naturally progress and the building tell us where to go.
Oh my goodness, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
I think it was no regrets, right?
None whatsoever.
No regrets. Okay. All right.
And Haley needs to tell us about her plans for this space because it's going to revive the speakeasy.
Oh, cool.
So, that's fun.
Yes. So right now we are using this space. The upstairs is we do have many vendors and it's a seasonal market. So, we'll have, flowers and hydroponics in the summer. And then now obviously we have things for fall and then winter. We also have yoga classes. We do therapy. We do painting classes. We do the investigations and you can do a lunch down here. We rent out the space for the conventions and so on and so forth. And then we also work with private groups that want to investigate. They need a venue. They are they may be a group that want to get data. And so we do that, but we use this for paranormal investigations, but we are reviving the speakeasy. So they're watch for that by invitation. You may get something and you may get a code. And that means that you could spend time in this speakeasy with some flappers and we're not going to tell everything.
Oh, that's awesome.
I think it's
really smart.
Yeah, no, I think it's a super cool idea, a great usage of the space and a revival to one of this building's past lives. It's absolutely fantastic. And I love that you are taking on that renovation and you have such a passion for returning the historical portions of the building. Like one of the things we talked about before Terry joined us here and before the conversation started, you were sharing about your journey to try and find some of the original antiques from when this was a mortuary and then return them to their home in order to return the history. And I just love that. I love the dedication.
Thanks for tuning in to 93 WIBC. Don't touch that dial. We have more unique and interesting conversations on the way. Haley continues her discussion coming up next, sharing the wonderful stories from La Mortuaire in Cambridge City. Keep your dial tuned to 93 WIBC. This is Saturday Night on the Circle. I'm Ethan Hatcher. More coming up next.
It's been a long time.
Listening to Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIBC.
Hope you're doing well.
Welcome back to Saturday Night on the Circle, where I'm your host, Ethan Hatcher, and we're continuing our conversation in Cambridge City with Law Mortuaire owner Haley, as well as our own Terry Stacy. You can hear her program, The First Day Show, from 9 to noon every Sunday morning. Thanking producer Carl for his hard work, as usual. Producer par excellent here at Saturday Night on the Circle. One of the best parts of Cambridge City was how intact much of the original architecture for the town was, giving this small slice of Americana an opportunity to shine. It felt like a stroll back in time walking down the main street of the town, and I loved it. Haley, who we're now resuming our conversation with, was excited to share about her efforts to research and return as many original funeral home antiques back to the property that she's able to find. Truly a worthwhile vision for an already historic shop. Haley joins us now to continue the conversation.
We are looking to acquire anything that might be historic or pertinent to this building or other buildings. We have great, on US 40, we have many, many buildings that are wonderful, but obviously mine is special. Yeah. So anyone has anything or, we're just going to continue to research and work with Historical Society and try and find those and bring those back home.
Tell us a little bit more about Cambridge City and what makes this special. I see the mural that I took a picture of right across the street from you. This was apparently one of the stops where Lincoln's train car came through. What else about this little town is special?
Everything. And I think it's beautiful. It's quaint. It's the feel. And I think that's probably also what drew me. You know, it drew me here. And now I just want to share and show everyone else what I know is already here and love. So the funeral procession did come here. It's rumored that he did stay in the Vinton House, which is across the street. And she's a very good friend of mine and a shop owner. So Abraham Lincoln supposedly lived or stayed overnight up there, and then the funeral procession did go through. That used to be a canal house. So Cambridge City was basically what made us put us on the map was that there was a canal that came through, and that made us really pertinent location because people could bring their boats through and get supplies. The Vinton House, the people did stay downstairs. They stayed in the hotel. They would bring supplies and take supplies. So that's a great building, and that's on the 22nd. That is going, we're not only investigating my building, but I have, she's graciously opened her, so we're going to investigate that building.
That's
cool. So we have
multiple buildings around.
And we're also, there's a possibility there was a vaudeville circuit ballroom that it was a theater. And so we are looking to possibly investigate that. So very, very historic. We have the canal. We have all these wonderful places. General Meredith had at the end of the train here, it was a great mansion. So we used to have racehorses. There's another mural down there. And so it sold racehorses. So that also made us very, very special because people would come from all over to buy those. So they would get off the train and they would come pick their racehorse. And it was, at first, it was all this big, gorgeous land, but then because of people to spy, they put big fences up. So we had General Meredith. We have a gentleman that was a Buffalo Wild West gentleman that you'll have to, that I don't know a lot about, but I know Dr. Birch does. And so he's going to kind of help me. So he has a house there, and he was famous. Trying to think anything else. And there's probably another speakeasy. So again, just very, very historic. And anyone who's interested in these kinds of things, not just the paranormal, but they're also interested in the history. So we've got generals. We've got, I also work with the group that goes and tries to preserve our cemetery. And so they did a reenactment, which was super interesting. We did a reenactment. And so each person took a character that was their gravestone, and as you walked around, they again became in character and said, this is who I am, this is how I lived. So yeah, so you just don't know till you come.
You know about how many people live here, do you know?
Not that many, only about, I think like around 2,200.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I was just curious. the size of it. Yeah. Because I know I grew up just down the road, as I said, on the National Road, just west of Knightstown. Okay. So grew up in that direction. So we were always headed up and down US 40. And Cambridge City, it still has that great same look that I remember as a kid. Very nostalgic when I came in today. I mean, just, and I love that part of it all. And so I wondered if it's grown, if it's not so grown since I was a kid in the 80s.
Not so much, but we have, you know, people coming in, you know, all the time, and we want them to visit. A lot of Airbnbs so that you can stay, you can come, you can shop, you can eat, and then again, we're having all these events that we are trying to do.
Such a great thing.
For a small town, there's so much to do. There's more than 500 booths here. There's multiple shops, so it's a great opportunity for antiquing, and if you're into paranormal, the supernatural, there's stuff to engage you there, there's stuff to shop, there's good food. But what I appreciate is how picturesque the community is. I am a big architecture enthusiast, and I think it's a terrible damn shame when so many of these communities allow their buildings to deteriorate, and then it takes away the character of the community, which Cambridge is exactly the opposite of that. I mean, you walk down the main street, and it feels like you've gone back in time, and I think it's wonderful that you are participating in the preservation of that community heritage, and if you have the opportunity, dear listener, to come down to Cambridge City, you should.
Yeah, absolutely you should. And the drive itself is really wonderful, especially on a day like today, an autumn day as the trees are starting to turn and the farmers are plowing their fields and harvesting, and it's just been a really great drive. What, an hour from Indy?
About an hour from Indy, straight shot down 40 or 70, depending on if you want to go the quick or scenic route.
Yeah, either way. But it's just an hour away. Everybody looking to get away from time to time. Fall breaks are coming up. So anyway, I just love it. What else, Ethan? Anything else we want to know while we're down here in the scary room before something gets me?
I think we've covered everything. I think that's
about
it.
Why don't we just move on then? Why don't we just move on and up? I mean, again, I haven't felt anything, but I mean, I just don't know when it's going to happen. It's always a surprise when you watch it in the movies. When I least expect it, something could grab me by the neck and take me down. So we're signing off for a moment. We'll be back when we get back upstairs.
After we finished our conversation with owner Haley at Shop La Mortuaire in Cambridge City, we moved on to other portions of the town with more entertaining conversations on the way. We went to Building 125 and spoke with the owner proprietor, who also happens to be the town physician, affectionately known as Doc, along with his wife Norma. Both of them were incredibly sweet, insightful, and had lots of information to share about the town's history and how it developed. So stay tuned for that, coming up next on 93 WIBC.
Welcome to my world. Won't you come on in?
You're listening to Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIBC.
Step into my heart.
This has been another exciting episode of the one and only Saturday Night on the Circle. Thanks for tuning in and listening. Producer Carl has been on the board doing a great job as always. Together with him, I'm your quirky and curmudgeonly host, Ethan Hatcher. Beginning to wrap up our adventure in Cambridge City, we ventured down to Building 125, where we spoke with the owner and town physician, affectionately known as Doc, together with his wife, Norma. They shared parts of the town's history as a canal byway when the majority of goods received used to be brought in by boat. And also, they shared the connection that the town has with Abraham Lincoln, as it was one of the locations where his funeral train passed through and stopped to honor the president's friendship with one of the town residents. It was very special to be able to hear about this early history of the community, a history we share with you now.
This is Ethan Hatcher here with Terry Stacy, 93 WIBC. Of course, we've been passing through Cambridge City here in Indiana and have been having a fantastic time in the small town. Of course, we came out, this is October 8th, we've been taping this, and they have an antique festival going on. All the shops are open. Everything is decked out to the nines. It's a beautiful day. They've got small vendors out, and we're now in Building 125. Talking with Doc, the proprietor, and I guess you're something of a local historian, too. Is that correct?
Mostly. I know about as much as anyone, but not near enough. Actually, it's my wife and I, my wife, Norma.
Oh, Would Norma like to join us, or is she tied up?
She's over there talking in some place.
Okay, well, maybe we'll call her over in a minute. Have you lived here forever?
Yeah, I grew up here, yes.
You grew up here.
What I love about the town is how much of it seems to be well-preserved, and I hate when people bulldoze through these small towns and they lose a lot of their character and a lot of their heritage. But I see you have the Vinton House. It's a very well-maintained historical hotel. There is a small museum up in the top that Terry Stacey and I just got done walking through that they talk about the canals of Wayne County and throughout Indiana. It's a very informative stop. If you come through Cambridge City, make sure to stop in the Vinton House and go peruse their local museum. It's very cool. What else is fun here in the community? I see you've got the Opera House next door.
Yeah, we own three buildings here, and the third one, there's an old opera house up above there. That's an 1870s building, so the one we're in right now is about 1905. The town itself was founded in 1836, so it's been around a while, and the National Road is what kind of helps set it off and make it work. And at one time, there were multiple railroads in town that were active. Now there's just one, but that was the transportation. It was a transportation hub. We had a canal that come through town, and where the Vinton House Hotel was a turnaround basin for the canal. And so everything kind of gelled and worked very well at the time. And, of course, the Lincoln funeral train come through town after Lincoln was shot, and they stopped three times in town, one at the home of General Solomon Meredith at the other side of town. He and Lincoln were friends, and they stopped there as a courtesy to tribute to each other, and also stopped at two depots here in town. And so and there's several different funeral train books out there, but most of them say it stopped three times, which I believe to be true.
Wow. I mean, so Lincoln had a connection with the community, which just seems, I mean, incredible. But he was also a friend with Governor, wasn't he?
Oh, yes. I think so. I don't know how connected he was and during what time period it was. But, yes, he was. They were all connected. Our high school is Lincoln High School. So it's kind of a well embedded in our community, the word Lincoln.
How many generations before you on your side of the family were here and maybe even passed stories down about what happened here many years ago, including the days when Lincoln's funeral train came through?
Well, we have multiple generations. My great-great-grandfather built a house. My great-grandfather built a house. My grandfather built a house. My dad was born here. Of course, I was born in Henry County Hospital, but grew up here in town, graduated from high school, and married my high school sweetheart.
Oh, my gosh. And now you're thinking about moving.
No.
No. No, I think that's pretty amazing. Is it tough to get generations after you now to stay in town in Cambridge City?
Sometimes, because everybody wants to go to the big city. Right. They get involved in industrial stuff and things like that. But there's no place like home.
No.
I was somewhere else once, then I come back and practice. I'm still practicing medicine. Been here like 47 years, so. Yeah. And I plan on staying until I retire. And the way things are going, I may work forever.
It's a beautiful town. Can you tell us more about the entertainment venues here? Of course, you mentioned that there was the Opera House. We've heard about there being a couple ballrooms in the community. There were vaudeville performers that came through. Tell us about the entertainment in small town America.
Most of the lodge buildings all had a dance hall or entertainment hall of some sort, and they used them for a variety of things. Of course, in the Opera House, they had just like a theater, and there's like a double deck seating. There was a balcony at one time. You can still gently see where it was. So it was a happening place. I remember my grandmother telling me stories about coming to town way back when, you know, and doing activities such as dancing and so forth.
Now, is the Opera House still in semi-functional condition, or has it been gutted?
It's been pretty well gutted. You can still see the remnants of it. The rim that held the balcony is still there, and you can see the actual steps that went to the balcony are still sitting there. And, of course, at one time, there was an outside exit for an emergency, like a fire exit. That you can see where that was. There's a back entrance and a front entrance, and there's like a balcony, and it's pretty cool, but it's just an empty area right now.
How did this area become a spot, a a hot spot for antiques.
Well, we weren't the first antique store, but there was multiple antique stores in front of us. I mean, Beth down on the other corner of the antique mall, she was one of the first antique shops as far as big shops. Multiple small shops over the years, and some of our friends had antique shops. Then we come in, and I wanted to save this building. And then I bought the second one over, Opera House. But then I bought the one in the middle. So now we have over 16,000 square feet of stuff. And, you know, and I want to preserve it. I'm president of the historic group and Western Wayne Heritage. And, you know, it's just kind of, it's a small project that kind of got carried away.
It's a small project that got carried away.
Yeah, I wouldn't call renovating these old historic buildings small projects. And I know a thing or two about that, being a property owner in downtown Indianapolis and renovating a few single family homes, much less a big building like this. And I really appreciate that you've kept what I assume are the original tin ceilings.
Yeah, still in nice condition.
That's so beautiful.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we've restored multiple homes and multiple industrial buildings. We enjoy it all. And my old medical building also.
I think that's fantastic. Okay, now the big question. Spooky Halloween time. Mm-hmm. Have you been haunted at some point in Cambridge City?
Absolutely.
Oh, well, then you have to tell us the story.
In our home, well, in our guest house, people talk about the voices. And in our old house, an 1850s home, we just moved across the street to our new home. We've heard multiple music and people talking and all kinds of things. So there's, and we used to do ghost tours here in town. Al Hunter from Indianapolis area would come over. He used to come over here. In fact, he used to own a building here in town, and he used to do ghost tours here in town.
No kidding. Ever been scared?
No.
What do you think the spirits want when they try and contact the living? What are they after?
Well, they're here because their stuff is here.
Are we keeping them here?
You're probably sitting on someone's chair right now.
Are we keeping them here? I mean, I have a collection of, like, old phonographs and stuff.
I think they're all friendly.
No, we've not heard about poltergeists. It's just hauntings with friendly ghosts.
There's still time.
Yeah. Hey, listen, thank you. You want anything else, Ethan?
Can you tell us a little bit about running the antique shop? How long have you been owner and proprietor of this fine establishment?
We've been here about 12 years now, and we were involved in antiques prior to this, and then I accidentally bought this to save it, and then here we are. But, I mean, my wife runs it because I'm still working in the medical field, still a family doctor here in town, and so I'm busy there. She runs this, and then we frequently go places and buy antiques and come back and resell, and we work with the other people in town. We all work together. It's what makes it work. There's like 11 antique stores in a small town. That's unheard of.
Yeah, and so maybe one of your, what do you look for when you're out there looking? Is there something that always catches your eye?
Yeah, something that's different at a fair price.
I'm after the same thing when I'm hunting for antiques. And fun stories, too, you know, when you can find an object that has an interesting provenance or a character to it.
Yeah, people always want to hear this. Just, they always say, tell me a story about this piece. And so we find a way to tell them a story.
Wow.
If there is one.
Yeah. And if not, you make something up.
Close. I would never mention that, of course.
Doc, thank you so much for spending time with us and sharing your story and telling us a little bit more about Cambridge City. It's a really special small town. I also appreciate that you have helped preserve part of the community by renovating the building. And I can't overemphasize enough how important it is for these communities to keep the aspects of their architectural heritage around for future generations to enjoy. Because once you've taken that away, you mutilate the character of a community, and every place becomes the same homogenous McDonald's, Walmart, same old place, every small town, and that's awful, but not Cambridge. Right. And so it's cool that you've helped preserve an element of that.
We have a historic district in the downtown area we put in back in the 1980s, and we try to maintain the character of the town, because that's what makes it work.
Yeah.
Thank you, Doc. Come out and see him. Cambridge City. He's in the 125 building. Thank you, Doc.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into this special edition of Saturday Night on The Circle. We've been sharing an adventure in Cambridge City with Terry Stacey. We interviewed the owners of La Mortuaire and Buildings 125, that's Haley and Doc. Both of them had incredible stories of the town's history to share, but the conversation doesn't end there, because wrapping up the show this evening, I'm going to play the talk we had with Doc's wife at Building 125, that's Norma, and she had more interesting things about the town to tell. So stay tuned to 93 WIBC for more coming up next.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where Harlem sits, putting on the ring.
This is Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIBC.
Thanks for tuning in to the final segment of Saturday Night on The Circle with me, your host, Ethan Hatcher. Wrapping things up this evening with Norma Jean, Doc's wife at Building 125. Everyone in Cambridge was extremely sociable and friendly. I loved getting to speak with the town residents because they had so many cool stories to share. Also acting as an antique hotspot for many miles in any direction, Cambridge City is well worth the excursion. If you take nothing else away from this evening's show, I hope you'll schedule some time to come down and visit. If antiques and friendly people plus good food are your style, then this is a small town destination you don't want to miss. Again, thanks for tuning in to Saturday Night on The Circle and showing your support for the show. Tonight, we're rounding things off with the wonderful Norma Jean at Building 125.
Yeah. Norma Jean is now with us, Doc's wife, and she's the one I'm told that really runs things around here in the 125 building. And Ethan Hatcher, Terry Stacey, we just wanted to get your comment because you're the one that's been working. Doc has been with us, and you've been working. Your perspective, I want to hear what you have to say about what makes Cambridge City so special and haunted.
Haunted.
We've heard a lot of ghost stories while we've been around town.
Oh, I see.
Have you ever been, has anything ever?
We used to have haunts and history tour in town.
That's what Doc said.
Yeah, it was great.
Did you get scared?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay.
There was a brewery in town, and a man got drunk, went home, and hatcheted his wife to death. That's true.
And that's a true story. And he's still around, you think? His ghost? What about her?
I don't know.
That's a scary story.
It's true.
Long ago that happened.
Yeah.
That kind of thing hasn't happened in a long time.
I wouldn't advertise that bit on the front of town. You know? Home of the hatchet murders.
And now we talk about what makes Cambridge City so special.
Oh, I think the antique stores makes it special. And the people.
Yeah. When you go looking for antiques, what do you look for? What catches your eye?
I like furniture and real early furniture and just different items.
Isn't it a shame how early American furniture is really bottomed out right now? It's kind of hit a bit of a lull. At least in town, I hear everybody kind of
in Indianapolis.
Like, oh, brown furniture. Let's dump some chalk paint on that and antique the antique.
Yeah, That's true.
Is it the younger generation that's doing that?
It is.
They don't know.
Dorks that follow Etsy and watch HGTV.
Wait a minute.
Wait
a minute.
It's true.
You're awesome. Thank you. Thanks for talking to us.
You're welcome.
This has been another exciting edition of Saturday Night on The Circle with me, your host, Ethan Hatcher. I really hope you've enjoyed our adventure in Cambridge City with Terry Stacey. We got to speak with wonderful town residents like Haley of La Mortuaire, as well as Doc and Norma Jean from Building 125 about the history of their town. Of course, an afternoon excursion would not be complete without good eats as well. So, to round off our adventure, we stopped by the local restaurant, The Number 9 Grill. And I gotta say, much to my surprise, they cooked up a really quality steak for an extremely reasonable price that would put downtown steakhouses here in Indianapolis to shame. Terry had the chicken noodle soup with baked sweet potatoes Everything was scrumptious. So if you find your way down there, Number 9 Grill, worth the stop. Find pictures of our adventure posted to social media on my Facebook page. And don't forget to plan your own visit to Cambridge City. It's well worth the stop, an extremely charming slice of small town America. Unfortunately, folks, that's all I've got for this evening, bringing another edition of the show to a close. I leave you with my parting words of wisdom, as always, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, and whoever you're with, remember that life is a state of mind. And I'll see you next week, folks.